Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into some fascinating sources you shared, especially that key study on business funding strategies in 2025.
Yeah, some really interesting material there.
Definitely. So our mission really is to unpack how all these big shifts, new laws, tighter credit, global trade changes are forcing businesses to, well, rethink finance on the fly.
It's a lot to navigate.
It is. We want to pull out the key insights, help you understand the real cost of capital today, and figure out the right funding methods for, you know, this current landscape.
So yeah, lots to cover.
Get ready. We're going from recent legislation, some history lessons on tariffs, all the way to some pretty innovative financing stuff.
Sounds good. Where do we start?
Okay, let's jump right in. This major piece of legislation, the Omnibus Business and Budget Balancing Act, the OBBBA, it just passed July 3rd, 2025. What's the immediate ripple effect we need to grasp here?
Well, the first thing that jumps out is it's kind of dual nature.
Dual nature, how so?
On one side, you've got significant tax relief, specifically targeting families earning under $250,000. And interestingly, it eliminates taxes on tips.
Okay, so direct relief for a lot of people.
Exactly. But at the same time, the act cuts back support for social programs. We're talking Medicaid, SNAP.
Right. And the sources highlight how that shifts burdens, potentially increases disparity.
Mm-hmm. That's the broader societal picture. But what about businesses specifically? What's the OBBBA doing there?
For businesses, the key thing is these targeted incentives, like tax credits for domestic manufacturing, for workforce training.
Okay. So ways to potentially lower their capital needs.
Precisely. If your business aligns with those areas, it can really change your funding calculations. It's less you need to borrow or raise overall.
It's fascinating, really, how one piece of legislation can create such different waves across the economy.
Mm.
You know, individuals, social programs, corporate strategy.
It really is complex.
Which raises a good question. Beyond this domestic policy, how are those global factors, like trade policies you mentioned, feeding into this whole new picture?
Yeah, good pivot, because tariffs are still very much front and center, aren't they? And history gives us some, well, pretty stark lessons about how they actually play out versus the intention.
Oh, absolutely. The intention is almost always, you know, protect domestic industry, give the home team an advantage.
Right.
But what we often see, especially in more developed economies, is that tariffs end up driving up costs. They don't always work as planned.
And those historical examples you found in the sources really drive this home. I mean, Smoot-Hawley back in 1930 intended to help U.S. industry.
That was spectacularly backfired. Yeah.
Yeah.
Contributed to a global trade meltdown, made the Great Depression worse. A classic case study.
Or even earlier, that tariff of 1828. Meant to boost the North, but it just inflamed tensions, led to the nullification crisis, deepened those regional splits.
Yeah, serious unintended consequences. Though, it's fair to say the sources also point out the Tariff Act of 1789. That one actually seemed to work.
That's true. It was early days for the U.S., designed to support brand new industries. And it did help generate revenue and protect those early manufacturers.
So it's not always a disaster, but it underscores just how unpredictable trade policy can be.
Yet.
And why, knowing that history is so important for businesses right now, especially when, as you mentioned, other avenues for capital are getting squeezed.
Exactly. It's not just theory. This brings us to a major pinch point. Traditional lending. The sources show a real tightening there, right?
They do. The statistic is pretty stark. Something like over 60% of banks have raised their lending standards.
Wow, over 60%.
Yeah. And the direct consequence is, well, less access to capital. It particularly hits small and mid-sized businesses, the ones who really depend on that short-term liquidity to operate day to day.
So banks are just being more cautious overall?
It seems like a mix of economic uncertainty, maybe some regulatory pressure too. But the bottom line is, it's harder to get those traditional loans.
Okay, so the squeeze is real.
And this broad tightening, it forces businesses to be, frankly, much more strategic. But interestingly, the impact isn't the same everywhere. Different sectors feel it differently.
Okay, so it's not a one-size-fits-all squeeze. How do these policy shifts and the tight credit market land differently across sectors? And what should their funding focus be?
Well, the sources draw a pretty clear line. Take manufacturing and construction. They're getting hit by higher material costs, probably from tariffs, right? So they need more cash just to operate.
Bigger cash requirements.
Exactly. So for them, the big focus has to be on short-term liquidity. And often, that means looking beyond banks towards alternative funding.
Okay, so alternatives for short-term needs there. What about, say, tech and healthcare? They seem positioned differently.
They really are. Those sectors, They're actually benefiting from some of those tax incentives in the OBBA. Plus, they tend to rely less on external funding for just basic operations.
So their focus is different.
Yeah, for them, it's more about long-term strategic debt, funding growth, R&D, acquisitions, thinking bigger picture, not just covering next month's payroll.
This split makes perfect sense, which immediately makes me wonder if the traditional routes are tight and sectors like manufacturing need that short-term cash. What are the best alternative solutions, especially for liquidity?
Right, and this is where working capital financing comes into the spotlight. The sources really emphasize its growing importance.
Working capital financing. Okay, define that for us. How does it actually work?
So the basic idea is providing short-term capital to cover those immediate operational costs. Think payroll, rent, inventory. But the key difference is how it's provided. It's designed to avoid the rigid constraints of a typical bank loan.
Constraints like fixed monthly payments, long applications.
Exactly. The why it works comes down to a few things.
Right.
First, flexibility. Repayment terms are often tied to your actual revenue cycle. So if you have a slow month, your payment might adjust. That's huge.
That sounds incredibly useful, especially compared to a fixed loan payment hitting when cash is low.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Second, speed. You can often get funds in days, not the weeks or months a traditional loan might take. That lets businesses jump on opportunities or handle emergencies fast.
Speed and flexibility. Got it.
And third, revenue alignment. Options like invoice financing, for example, base the funding amount and sometimes repayment directly on your outstanding invoices, your incoming cash.
So it stretches your existing capital further.
Precisely. It gives you liquidity without demanding rigid payments, regardless of your cash flow. It adapts to your business's reality, unlike a traditional loan demanding the same payment, whether you had a great month or a terrible one.
That makes a ton of sense for managing cash flow day to day. But let's talk about the cost. These alternative options, they often look more expensive on paper, right? Higher interest rates, maybe fees.
That's the perception, and it's often the first hurdle. The sticker price, as you called it.
Yeah, the sticker price. It can be scary. But the sources argue the effective cost is often lower. How do we unpack that? How do we look past that initial number?
It's a really crucial point. Yes, the stated interest rate or factor rate might be higher, but you have to consider what you gain.
Okay.
Number one is that speed we talked about. Getting capital now versus weeks from now lets you capture opportunities you'd otherwise miss. Think snapping up discounted inventory or onboarding a big new client immediately. Mm. That has real value.
The value of immediacy.
Exactly. Then there's the simple present value of money. Cash today is worth more than cash tomorrow because you can put it to work sooner. Investing in growth, covering cost to avoid losing revenue.
Right. And the sources had that really pointed example about opportunity cost, didn't they?
They did. It makes it very concrete. Waiting a month for a slightly cheaper traditional loan might mean you lose a $50,000 contract altogether. Right. Whereas grabbing a faster, maybe slightly higher rate alternative loan for, say, $50,000 might cost you an extra $5,000 in fees or interest. But you get the $50,000 contract. The net result is way better, even with a higher sticker price.
So that opportunity cost calculation is key. Paying a bit more upfront can prevent losing a much bigger opportunity down the line.
Precisely. It's a powerful concept and, yeah, often overlooked when people just compare interest rates side by side.
Okay. So we've got legislation, trade, tight credit, alternative funding, true cost. What else is shifting the landscape? The sources mentioned ESG, right?
Yes, ESG. Environmental, social, and governance criteria. It's definitely moving from the fringes to become a more mainstream consideration in funding.
So investors are looking beyond just the financials now.
Increasingly, yes. The sources indicate a growing number of investors are actively prioritizing companies that demonstrate a real commitment to sustainability, ethical operations, community impact, strong governance.
And how does that actually translate into getting funding? Does having a good ESG profile make you more attractive?
It seems so. Aligning your business with ESG principles can open doors to specific ESG-focused investors in investment funds. They're looking for that long-term value, that responsible operation.
So it's another layer of diligence, almost, for both the business and the investor.
You could put it that way. It's about showing you're building a sustainable, responsible business for the long haul, not just chasing short-term profits. It's becoming almost as important as the traditional financial metrics for some investors. It just reflects the, you know, the broader, more complex environment we're in.
Okay, so as we start to wrap this up, it's been a real journey through these sources. We've hit the OBBA's impacts, those tariff history lessons, the credit squeeze, the rise of working capital financing, and looking past that sticker price.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts. I think the core takeaway is that today's financial world demands more than just reaction. It demands real strategic thinking about why certain funding tools are valuable now, maybe more than they were before. Adaptability plus understanding.
Adaptability and understanding. Well said. And maybe a final thought for you, our listener, to chew on. As you think about all this, consider how these trends might change not just how you get funding, but maybe who you get it from.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as criteria like ESG become more prominent. What does that mean for your long-term strategy beyond just meeting the immediate payroll or financing the next project? Something to think about.
Definitely food for thought.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive today.